The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
And now, Sports Talk 1240. Second hour here on Sports Talk 1240 AM, right here in Babylon, New York. Unkwa Sonye, Derek Wasiak sitting across from me. You got us for one more hour here from 9 to 10. It's going to be a pretty much all baseball show, and very appropriate that we still have Brian Doyle from the 1978 Yankees on the line. Brian, you still there?
I'm still here.
Thank you, sir, for hanging out with us and sticking it out. We ran up really, really hard against the break when we were heading into this 9 o'clock hour, but could just give us a few more thoughts on how hard the death of the captain, Thurman Munson, was for the team.
It was extremely hard. I'll never forget the next game. It was raining. Tarp was on. We finally took it off. You don't forget over 10 minutes of fans still clapping. Everybody goes out to their position except home plate's empty. And the fans were over 10 minutes. Clapping. Everybody is crying. I remember Bobby Mercer. We win the game with a walk off, and he knocks in all five runs.
Yeah.
It was one of the most devastating times in my life and in the life of all our guys. He was he was such a figure that held things together. And Diana's doing well. The three children are doing well, and I just want to say real quick, Michael, the son, had never seen his daddy's locker, and my son has never met a stranger, and they're both the same age, and I'll never forget at age 14 or 15, Kirk asked Michael, "Have you ever been to the clubhouse to see your dad's locker?" And Michael said no, and Kirk said, "Let's go." And Kirk talked himself into the clubhouse, and Michael got to see his daddy's locker.
That's nice.
And that was a huge thing.
You know, and that's really a beautiful moment when you have kids that can come together, especially off of something that was so impacting on his life. Let's fast forward a little bit through your career. You spent two more years with the Yankees in 78 and 80 before stepping away from the game after 1981. How did you adjust to life after your time on the diamond was done?
Well, there was 78. We opened up Doyle Baseball Academy, the three brothers.
Right.
Denny ran it while Blake and I were still playing. It is still going on. We were we were innovators. We had the very first showcase that's ever been done. Well, that's done now all the time.
Right.
Yeah, I can name easily 100 major leaguers that went to our camp, but more importantly, our crowd moments was when guys that wanted to go to college got a little more edge, a little more information, and they got to play in college. That's what we were all about, and we were very proud of that. Blake and Denny still had the school, even though Blake's the Rockies hitting coach. I left, 12 years ago, and became a pastor, became a minister.
Right.
And now that I'm not doing that, I have Global Baseball, and we use baseball as a platform, and we're in 9 countries. And do things like very quickly. We started 4 house churches in Cuba, and now we have over 80 house churches in Cuba. My son is in Vienna as we speak at the European tournaments, and we teach from the 8-year-old still to the major leaguer. And I still have major leaguers call me. And I'm not smart, but I know that I've taught more people the game of baseball than anybody in the history of the game. So it's been a cool ride, and I'm using baseball as ministry.
Well, you know, Brian, I told you off air, I am not one of those guys that made it to the majors, but I did attend your baseball academy. You ran a showcase on Long Island, and I went to the big camp down in Florida in Winter Haven, the Red Sox facility back in 86, and I learned a tremendous lot. I excelled defensively, but I found out down in Florida that I wasn't the hitter that a lot of other guys were. So I was almost like one of those 70s catches, you know, or 60s, like a Tim McCarver type or something like that. But I thought you did a great job with those camps. I had a great experience, and I learned a ton, especially defensively, catching and playing third base. I wanted to ask you one more question.
This yes.
To end it on a high note. Now, I know you said your brother Denny had a longer career than you, but he only hit 15 more homers than you.
Boom.
Now, you had one homer in your career. Can you tell us about the experience back in 1980 with the Yankees? Your home run.
I'm going to do this very fast.
Go ahead.
It was against a guy named Len Barker who threw about 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, Cleveland, yeah.
When he was with the Braves.
All right.
He threw a perfect game.
Yeah, with the Indians, he threw a perfect game. Right.
And so I hadn't played in 2 weeks, and now I'm going up against Barker. And I said, okay, Brian, just be real loose. His first pitch is a fastball inside, and I literally hit a line drive into the Yankee dugout.
Oh.
And I said, backed out, and I said, okay, that's a little too loose. Let's go to left field. Well, he throws a ball outside, fastball, and then he comes back inside. With a fastball that's about letter high, and I hit it, and it's the reason I remember it. It was the 100th home run of that year, my first one, and the Yankees 100. So he put the power behind it. I did.
You put the bat on the ball, more importantly. And in retirement, you taught hundreds, thousands of youngsters how to play the game, how to excel. And more importantly, what you mentioned, in terms of exposure for colleges and in terms of taking the right path, if that's what they chose and they were able to do. I think you did a great job with that, with those camps.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate being on your show and – Derek and Qua, you guys have been great.
I'll tell you what, Brian, you were even better. We appreciate you taking mega extra time to spend with us and map out that 78 season as well as anybody could. And we wish you nothing but the best in your battle with Parkinson's.
Indeed.
And staying healthy.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And all you Yankee fans, thanks a lot. Love you. You're the most intelligent baseball fans in the world.
There you go. Thank you, Brian.
Brian, thanks, and God bless you.
God bless you. Thanks.
Brian Doyle from the 1978 New York Yankees here on Sports Talk 1240. Let's bring it maybe not 21st century. Okay, I lied. Let's bring it back to this afternoon. Yanks take 2 out of 3 from the Chicago White Sox. 12-3 the final. Ivan Nova with the win. Samardzija, yeesh. I guess the Yankees are glad they didn't trade for him after all.
Yeah,
huh?
I'd say so.
But right after the break, the Yankees, a lot of questions were being asked. Would the pitching hold up? Was Teixeira really returning to at least being 30 home run Teixeira? He's homered 3 times this weekend, and all of a sudden this team has gone from, I don't know, the East is weak, to actually not just being a playoff contender, but they could be looking at a potential ALCS day in October.
Yeah, listen, you know, they are smacking the ball around with authority. I think that obviously for me their 3 biggest performers are A-Rod has been great coming back from hip surgery, like him or not. I'm not a big fan of his anymore. But Mark Teixeira, more importantly, Mark Teixeira, historically as a Yankee, he's like the groundhog. He would take 6 weeks to get going any given season. This year, power from the get-go, and he provides that gold glove first base play where he saves tons of errors defensively. You know, you don't have Jeter throwing the ball across the diamond tier anymore. So, I mean, he does a tremendous job at first. And Brett Gardner, I mean, he was an all-star for a reason. He's had an excellent season for the Yankees and a steady presence in the outfield, especially with Ellsbury being out injured at one point.
And, Derek, I can't say enough about how different this team really is from last year.
Right.
You have just about the same cast of characters. You have – the only thing that's changed is Derek Jeter is no longer your shortstop.
Right.
CeCe Sabathia is unfortunately worse than he was last year. And you no longer have a closer named Mariano Rivera at the back of your bullpen. Instead, you have Betances – who has kind of fluctuated between the 8th and the 9th when Andrew Miller wasn't hurt. And now all of a sudden, you've got a team that actually believes they can do it, and they do it with such efficiency this year.
But as disappointed, you being a tremendous Yankee fan, with CeCe Sabathia struggling as much as he has this year, are you that much impressed with the job Andrew Miller has done as a closer? Because he's never really been a closer before this year.
I mean, to be quite honest with you, as a reliever, you have to be prepared to come in no matter what the situation. The 9th does bring its own sack of troubles and its own set of mishaps and jitters and whatnot, but I'm really more impressed with the bullpen as a whole. And Joe Girardi, that man has been robbed of at least 2 Manager of the Year awards.
Right.
The Yankees have never been under 500 while he's been manager, and the 3 years that they didn't make the playoffs, aside from maybe 2008, they've actually been his best managing jobs because he's had to deal with a lot less. He dealt with an empty cupboard in the lineup. He dealt with an empty cupboard when it came to people being healthy, but now all the pieces are in play.
Right.
Now, my only concern is less about the pitching in terms of the whole cast as a whole.
Right.
But I'm way more concerned about who takes up after Pineda's no longer available for the rest of August, projected.
Right.
Tanaka tends to be a little bit uneven, and now we start to hear the name Luis Severino. Now, he was really hung about like a carrot to a rabbit in trade talks, and now all of a sudden he's set to make his debut in the Bronx this week. The rookie being this available in a pennant race, sometimes it's like playing with a mixed bag.
I'll tell you what, with all the great young pitching the Mets have, with DeGrom and Harvey, Wheeler's on the DL, right? But Syndergaard's pitching well. I mean, here's the one guy, right, homegrown. I mean Tanaka, Ray Yankees his first team, but not a homegrown product. And some other guys up and down, whatever. But this guy, I don't know anything about him other than what I saw in terms of his minor league stats. They're astounding. So this has got to be a guy that, as a fan, you got to get excited for, and you got to hope that he can come in and just, like, right from the get-go, put up real, real competitive, impressive numbers and log innings for this team, because Sabathia has shown nothing. I mean, nothing. And Tanaka, I mean, let me, you probably watch more Yankee games than me, but Tanaka, every time he pitches, I'm waiting for that next pitch that's going to blow out his arm, because they tried to avoid the surgery right away, and they're just trying to get through. But you just don't know. Look at what the Angels, C.J. Wilson now is going through.
Exactly.
With them, when he told them, I can't throw anymore now. Some of them are questioning, but he's like, I tried to do it up until now. You know, it's August now.
And it cost him.
Yeah.
And you wonder whether or not the Yankees can bounce back from that as well. Let's look at Severino's minor league stats. In Double A, not too bad. 2-2 record. A whip of 1.1.
Right.
About 4 strikeouts for every win. Not too bad. In 38 innings pitched, 32 hits allowed. 48 Ks against 10 walks. Those are solid numbers.
Right.
He's been untouchable in AAA. 7-0 in 11 starts. Allowed 40 hits against 61 and a third. 50 Ks, just 17 walks. With an ERA under 2.
And that's all. That is what you just said about his AAA numbers. That is all I know about this guy. But when I saw that, I'm like, well, that is something for Yankee fans to get excited about. You know, maybe this will be that one. Because, listen, the Yankees spend a lot of money, right? Are they spending as much as the L.A. Dodgers this year? No. The L.A. Dodgers are spending now the way the Yankees did back in 2002, 2003. But they usually spend a lot and bring in free agents. And now here's another guy. I mean, you were lucky. You're young enough where, as you grew up, you enjoyed Jeter and Pettit. And Rivera and Posada, you know, and Bernie Wheat and all that, you know, and it's been a while since they had a lot of that going on. I mean, I've been waiting for Gardner to have a real good season, and here it is. So now with this guy, can he really contribute right away? Because the Yankees are hitting, they're scoring runs, which is ultra important in July and August and even through September. But then when you do get to the playoffs, now pitching and defense is going to mean even more.
And here's what's very interesting about the way the organization's choosing to treat Severino.
Right.
Usually when you hear young arms come up, you hear innings limits, you hear pitch counts. The Mets have done that with pretty much all of their young arms that are contributing right now.
Right.
But the Yankees said very early on, there's no innings limit, there's no pitch count. As long as this young man can pitch, he's 21 years old, but as long as he can pitch and as long as he can contribute, he's going to be up and he's going to be there. And I think it finally shows that the Yankees, as far as 2015 is concerned, they're all in.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They got a 6-game lead right now.
I mean, but even at the beginning of the season, the sexy pick out in the East were the Orioles, the Blue Jays trading for Josh Donaldson, and the Yankees were kind of seen as that afterthought. But now the organization's gone from playing with house money, with them just playing over .500 through April and May, to them finally catching fire. And finally having a chance at some very fun October baseball.
Now, and I agree with that, because before the season, I remember specifically, from my standpoint, when we did our picks, I thought Baltimore was the team to beat in the division. I thought they had a strong season last year, a good presence in the playoffs, coming back with most of their team intact, a lot of good hitting in the lineup. And, hey, listen, the Yankees, they've been pretty steady all season long in their performance. I think a big part of it, now, like you said, there's only one Rivera. That's it. But, you know, Robertson did a good job, and then he was gone, signed for big money. I mean, they had Rivera for how many consecutive, 20-plus years?
20-plus
years. And they've been through two or three closes in the last, since he retired.
Yeah.
Right? So Andrew Miller, I think, is a big part of that. Betances is doing a great job, eighth inning setup guy. Let me ask you a question about Nathan Eovaldi, right?
Wow. That's really all I have to say.
Is he more of a beneficiary of the hitting that's provided, or because his ERA is like, it's over 4, but from your standpoint, I mean, I've seen him start a few games and he looked pretty good to me, but when I look at his numbers, 11-2, but I think he has like a 4.5 ERA.
The one thing that mystifies me about Nathan Eovaldi just really comes to show you that talent really only gives you so much.
Right.
This is a young man that throws nearly 100 miles an hour. But he doesn't miss bats.
He throws heat.
It's straight heat. It doesn't break up. It doesn't break down. And what has really taken him time to develop is how to pitch.
Right.
Not just throw, but actually pitch. And Larry Rothschild, he's done great works. Back when he was with the Cubs, he had young arms under him. Even though Dusty Baker tended to run him into the ground, they still matured as pitchers because of what Larry Rothschild did as a pitching coach. He's helped out Brian McCann, one of the better signal callers in the game of baseball today. And Eovaldi has gone from the enigmatic flamethrower to someone the Yankees can maybe lean on. I only say maybe because his start on Friday, it was okay, but he allowed his first couple home runs in about a month and change. So it's worth keeping an eye on whether or not he can keep progressing and sort of learn how to dance in and out of danger with that heat. But somebody else who I think is an unsung hero on that roster,
right.
You want to talk about filling a hole. The biggest hole from last year was when Derek Sanders and Jeter decided to hang up the cleats, get his number retired in Monument Park, and go off with Hannah Davis into the sunset, wherever in the world they are.
Right.
And now in steps Didi Gregorius, a highly touted prospect from both the A's and the D-backs, the systems. And he walks into the Bronx. He's expected to be the man right away. And he wasn't the man right away. But as he's gone on, he's hitting a respectable 260, 5 homers, 32 RBIs. Looks a lot better at the plate. Looks a lot better in the field as well. And you start to see glimmers of what made the Yankees so eager to go get him in the first place. They knew they weren't going to get the batting production back quite yet. But at the very least, at shortstop, they have someone who can field his position.
Right.
Someone who is a bit heady, tends to be a little too adventurous with plays, but somebody who generally plays major league level shortstop. And that was a hole that the Yankees are looking to fill. And so far, Gregorius is doing a decent job so far.
I think he's doing a solid job. A little disappointed in Stephen Trudeau. His stats look like he belongs in the Mets lineup.
And we'll talk about the Mets.
I mean, you bat 191? Not good. No good, man. I mean, he's got some home runs. I'll give him that. But usually anybody who plays in the Bronx hits lefty. It's going to give you some home runs of some sort.
Exactly.
He's got the 13 homers, but the sub-200 batting average, I mean, if memory serves correct, he was given a good chunk of change. He's not making, a minor league salary. So he's probably the only guy, though, that I would say this guy's been disappointing. Probably the only guy. And that's just purely offensive standpoint.
And defensively, he's had to learn a brand new position.
Right.
Had to learn how to retool his footwork, and has done a decent job thus far. But how about Chris Young? I mean, when you look up and down the Yankees lineup and you see the numbers they put up, the production that they provide, you don't normally think of Chris Young as a solid contributor. He was supposed to be the fourth outfielder,
right.
But he's hit his way into the starting lineup. 260, 12 homers, 33 RBIs through 95 games played. And his 260 batting average, if his season ended today, would be the highest batting average he's had in his entire career. Because people got to remember, this is a dude, back when the D-backs were sort of emerging back in the mid-2000s, he was their big pop leadoff guy who would steal a bunch of bases, but still only hit maybe 230, 240.
Right.
But this time, he's in a better lineup with a lot more protection around him. And more importantly, I think he's matured a lot as a player as well. And it doesn't hurt being in that clubhouse where winning is expected.
Yeah.
He's 31 years old now, and this time he's kind of hitting.
I think he's done a great job. Especially when you consider he's not one of the main guys in terms of starting every day. I mean, Beltran's back off the DL. Now, he's older, but he's going to get the nod. One, he's a switch hitter. And then you got, obviously, Ellsbury. He cashed in with his contract. And you got Gardner. But I think for a guy who's coming in, batting mainly against left-handed pitching, giving guys a day off, Chris Young always seems to produce. And if you're the spare outfielder, the fourth outfielder, that's what you want. You want a guy that you can put in. He's going to give you solid production day in and day out. And he does that. I think he does a great job for the team. You know, and the other guy I was thinking of, in addition to like what Teixeira did from the start of the season, you know, he doesn't bat 300 anymore like he did back when he was with Texas or even Atlanta. But the power numbers from him from day one. Also, another guy not as good last year, stepping it up more this year, Brian McCann. And he struggled at times last year. This year, more complete, more steady presence in the lineup, and with the power and driving the ball to gaps. He's done a great job. And he's done a great job behind the plate for the most part, I think.
And it's like I said before, just about the same cast of characters, aside from the few pieces that we mentioned.
Right.
But they are just worlds better than where they are. Big week for them. They have tomorrow off.
Right.
They open up 3 against the Sox and 3 against the Blue Jays. And the Blue Jays were very, very active this trade deadline. Troy Tulowitzki, David Price are both now members of the Toronto Blue Jays, and even they're pushing their chips to the table, thinking that they can at least make a run at the playoffs. If you're the Yankees, this is your week, because the rest of the month, aside from 3 games in Toronto against the Blue Jays and 3 games against the Astros late in the month, the only thing that hurts you is that you don't have any off days, because the Twins are fading away. The Indians have underperformed. You go to Atlanta last weekend of August.
Right.
And then you've got the Red Sox. And, yes, it's going to be a heated game because it is the rivalry. But the Yankees can make serious hay this month and sort of put the division on the back burner. They can take care of business.
Yeah, I tell you, Boston's been a bad team all season. And I can't remember a recent year where I saw such poor pitching performances on a daily. And Boston's pitching is abysmal. Let me just say it this way. If you're in the beginning of August and you've already given up 500 runs or more as a team, that's pretty bad. And that's where you are. That's where you're at with Boston, you know. Hitting, you know, are they hitting like they usually do? Maybe not. But it's not like they're not scoring any runs. But their pitching has been lousy. And I think this is a good spot for the Yankees to get solid pitching and just continue their bats work. They don't have a guy batting 340, 350, putting up all the big numbers. They don't have like a situation, you know, with like Trout and Pujols. You know, and like you said, Toronto, they made a serious statement. They went and got a big-time shortstop in Tulowitzki. And they picked up a big pitcher in David Price. And their attitude is not, even if we're not going for the division, we're going for that wild card spot we won in the playoffs. We won in this tournament here. So it's going to be interesting.
Oh, August, September, the last 3 months for the first time since maybe 2006. Right. There are two happy fan bases when it comes to baseball in New York. The Yankees are obviously happy. And we'll talk about the orange and blue on the other side of this break. You're listening to Sports Talk 1240 here on WGBB, 1240 AM.
Sports Radio New York and AM 1240 WGBB are proud to announce the new Sports Talk 1240, along with the launch of a brand new website at sportstalk1240.com. Check out our new site for information about upcoming shows, as well as easy access to past shows, articles, our live studio webcam, and more. Of course, be sure to tune in to Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on AM 1240 WGBB, or visit sportstalk1240.com for ways to listen to the live broadcast online or from your iPhone. We're excited about these new changes and hope you will be too.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan, or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out, or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you could find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA, or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Check us out every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. And visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip chain, use mass transit, rideshare, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York, breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
And now, back to Sports Talk 1240.
Back here on Sports Talk 1240, Unqua Sonye, Derek Wozniak, here in our Babylon, New York studios. Well, folks, it's been sort of a trend, at least in the beginning part of this decade. The Yankee fans would get really excited about August, September, and October baseball. And the Mets have their, the Mets fans, that is, they have their sayings. There, you gotta believe. There's always next year. There's, oh my goodness, why am I rooting for this team? There are absolutely no fans making that utterance tonight. This is likely the biggest series of the year for them. They play the Washington Nationals, their arch rival, and at this point in the season, they've been trailing them every step of the way. But as it stands here, halfway home at Citi Field, 5-1 New York, and if they sweep tonight, which would be their ninth sweep, their most since 1990. They sweep tonight. They are tied for the NL East. And keep in mind, this is the same team that nearly a month ago, people shook their heads and said, they just don't have it. Lucas Duda, who was on my fantasy team until I dropped him, and now I can't get him back. He couldn't hit for any. Hey, I wasn't then when I dropped him, but now he can't miss. And then the Mets did something that they don't usually do. They actually wanted to compete. The front office stood behind their guys and said, you know what? We see you and we got you. People have been chiding Sandy Alderson all year. Get them some bats. Get the pitching some bats. Why does Matt Harvey need to go and throw a one-hitter to have a chance of winning a game? So fittingly, they come in with Juan Uribe and Kelly Johnson. I won't lie, at the time, I wasn't a big fan of the move because I thought, well, these are the big bats that you get. Until someone pointed out earlier, said, listen, this offense as it was wasn't doing much. You have two more professional hitters. That's something. And then they get Yoenny Cespedes, by far one of the more underappreciated power hitters in the game of baseball today. Two-time home run derby champ, too, by the way. And a great arm in the outfield. You add those pieces to a now resurgent Lucas Duda, to Plawecki, who is finally starting to hold his own behind the plate, to Curtis Granderson, who's recaptured nearly his 40 home run barrage, and that pitching has still been as strong as it's ever been. The Mets are here, and they're not going anywhere. Maybe it's just the fact that all those moves have come at the right time. Maybe even it's because of the fact that, well, the Nationals aren't really playing that well right now. The Nationals have Bryce Harper, Yunel Escobar, and then they pray that Rendon, Zimmerman, Worth, I could go on. They pray that they stay healthy. But I sincerely feel that the Mets will not only take the division, at least at this point, they can take the division, and New York October baseball will finally be back.
It'd be insane. You know, it's funny you say it the way you did because Washington is one of the higher payroll teams, right?
That's true.
And the Mets almost like the small market team, right? Like the Kansas City Royals and the Pittsburgh Pirates or something like that. But I agree with you. I said it 2 weeks ago. They were still in there always within three games, it seemed like that. And I'm like, look at how bad the Mets are performing in the hitting department. I'm like, forget about acquiring. This is before the deadline. I'm like, all they have to do is hit a little bit better. With the way the pitching was holding them, it seemed like every time I turned on a game, it was scoreless in the fifth inning, and the other team had, you know, each team had a couple of hits. If the Mets were lucky to have a hit. Or someone had a no-hitter into the fifth inning. How many times did I turn it on, and one or both pitchers had a no-hitter going into the third, fourth, fifth inning? Amazing. And I actually thought the Uribe acquisition was excellent. From a clutch performer type, you know, role player. I'm not saying the big performer that they got was Cespedes. And the reason I liked that trade tremendously was because the other trades they were talking about giving up Zach Wheeler. And I'm a big proponent of don't sacrifice the future to try to make it now.
Exactly.
Now they might make the division like you said. They might. Because this might really energize them if they can get through this game. They're up 5-1 if they can sweep the Nationals. Maybe something special happens here the last 2 months. But the bigger picture, this Met team is not built to win a title right now. I think most people don't think that the current manager will be there when this team is ready to win. So that's why when I heard of other possible trades like Gomez, and you're going to give up Wheeler. I like Carlos Gomez. We had him once. You traded him for Santana. You know, he's had one or two big years, and this ain't one of them. Mm-hmm. So whether he does good or not the rest of the way, it doesn't mean anything to me. What meant something to me looking at the Mets is the plethora and roster of young homegrown pitchers they got. And Zach Wheeler, I understand he's out, surgery and all, but look at Jose Fernandez down in Miami. All these guys come back from surgery, and they wind up being even better. Just with technology and the whole medical field and the way they perform these surgeries. These guys are back in 12 months and they're stronger than ever. So I'd rather take my chances, you know, especially looking at what DeGrom's doing. Harvey struggled a little bit this year getting back from his injury, but still, you know, you're not hesitating to put him out there once every, you know, as one of your top two pitchers. Mm-hmm. And then this kid, Noah Syndergaard, right, Thor. Now, I would like to see those three with Zach Wheeler down the line, you know. So I love the Cespedes trade because you didn't give up Zach Wheeler. Even if it's a rental, I love it because now you're playing for now with Cespedes in your lineup. And speaking of Lucas Duda, like you said, he had another home run tonight. That's 9 home runs in the last 8 games.
It's unreal.
It's great. I'm happy for him. I like Duda because last year was his breakout season, 30 homers. He still hasn't hit 100. But with these 9 homers in 8 days, he's up to about 95 career home runs. So, I mean, if you looked at this team 2-3 weeks ago, and I go back because this is when we talk about this, me and my buddies, in terms of what the Mets need to do, I'm like, they just got to hit a little bit more. And the whole lineup was lousy. Like, I was almost like, fire the hitting coach because nobody's here.
Exactly.
I don't care if you brought him here to help Granderson. But the three biggest culprits were Curtis Granderson, Lucas Duda, and Mike Kadiah.
Exactly.
Right? Now Kadiah's out hurt. Maybe he comes back and he's a big influence when he comes back. But you said Granderson's name in a positive way. Yeah, he's picked it up recently. And Lucas Duda, you couldn't expect that from the best power hitters. 9 home runs, last 8 games. That's pretty good.
It really, really is. And even looking at this lineup as it stands today,
right,
they're not even at full strength in terms of everyone they trot out there. Darnold, still injured, may come back. And we already talked about Kadiah. Conforto, the kid, after Nuñez hit the DL, he's back on the Major League roster. And then finally at shortstop, I got to tell you, one of my friends gave Wilmer Flores so much grief
right
for shedding tears on the field. And I told him, that's crazy. You have a young man who came up through the organization who really didn't want to leave. And he had to play until the trade was, quote, finalized.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't even finalized. And finally he went out on a Friday and hit a walk-off home run. I don't know about you, but I wouldn't mind having a guy that said, man, I really don't want to leave.
Right.
I really, really like this team. And this is in an age where when you look at the way athletes portray themselves, they want to be focused on the next game, emotion this, emotion that. They really kind of toss it out the window. But this kid wore his heart on his sleeve, and if he can improve a little bit at short, just a little bit, or even keep playing second the way he has,
yeah,
shoot, this might very well be the best lineup in the NL East, and the NL East is weak this year. Let's not, you know, overhype it to what it is, but the Mets haven't been in a position like this in quite some time.
No, I think the Nationals are underachieving. But I think they've had their issues, too, like Strasburg just can't stay healthy. Right, but I'm not going to use that as an excuse for them because the Mets have been through a ton of injuries. Now, I say I'm not a big Terry Collins fan, but I have to give him credit for what the season's worth.
This is true.
You know, I truly believe that this team needs a better manager going forward, but he's not the worst manager I've ever seen, but that ain't going to get you a title. But for what it's worth, I got to give him credit. With all the injuries they've gone through and with – listen, the manager doesn't swing the bat for you. As lousy as this lineup's hit, I give him a ton of credit for keeping this team going the way it's gone, and they stayed in the race. And right now that division is only 2 teams. That's it. Everybody else, forget about them. Okay? Braves, forget it. This ain't the 90s anymore. There's no way. It's 2 teams. And their best chance might be the division.
It's true.
Instead of a wild card spot.
And ironically enough, the Braves were the first team, the 90s Braves were the first team that really came to mind when we broke down the type of arms that the Mets have.
Right.
The only trade that the Braves made to make that three-headed monster of Smoltz and Glavin was Maddux. And that's after he's already had great years with the Cubs.
Yep.
So as far as the Mets are concerned, they've set themselves up to do some incredible things this October. Now, I like that you mentioned Terry Collins not necessarily being tabbed as their manager of the future, but I'll combat that with one other name. The idea that maybe the Mets, I can feel the Mets fans getting excited just about now. Maybe the Mets have a shot at a very meaningful October. I'll leave it at that. If Ned Yost can take the Royals last year to the World Series, I think anybody, not anybody, but any decently competent manager can do it.
Right, but think about how he did it, though. Now, I don't think he has the lineup in the starting rotation that the Mets have, but he had tremendous defense. He played small ball, but that's tremendous true. Defense. Listen, his catcher, Perez, gold glove. All right, his left fielder, Gordon, gold glove. Right, Eric Hosmer, first base, gold glove. I mean, they had at least three, maybe four gold gloves in that line. And that was a big part of their, that was a huge part of their success was their defense and the small ball. You know, sacrificing, running the bases, and timely hitting, obviously. But I agree with you. I just don't think that – I think the Mets have the pitching. I don't know if they have the defense. You know, and Ligueras, right, gold glove last year, maybe not as strong defensively this year, but he might be an odd man out in the outfield.
Which is quite ironic because coming into this year, it was all about how we could start things up.
Right.
You know, so what a year it's been to follow the Mets and the Yankees for that point. I don't want to start that talk too early, but the dog days of August are coming. And you start to think in the back of your mind, potential postseason matchups. Who's in? Who's out? We'll go through all the divisions in just a bit, but how insane would it be if the Yankees and the Mets, they already have one Subway Series where both of those teams are set to meet up because of the way that interleague play is structured this year, all those series are spread out. The next time that the Yankees see the Mets is going to be in late September, where they're both likely going to have something to play for. How fun is Citi Field going to be for those three games?
It'll be fun. Listen, the Mets fans, they get behind their team. Like a lot of teams, when your team fails miserably, you know, people, they're not excited. They're too busy complaining. They don't go to the games. They're not as eager to do it. But now, you know, this is a big feeling that's rising up. And I think that the owners, at least, and the GM showed them that they're serious by acquiring Yoenis Cespedes. That's a huge acquisition, even if it's a rental. That's a huge acquisition and a statement.
Yankee fans should circle the following dates on the calendar. September Friday the 18th. September Saturday, rather, the 19th, and then the 20th, that Sunday as well. That's probably going to get flexed to a Sunday night game, by the way.
Mid-September they're playing.
Mid-September is when they play again. And who knows? They may have another date late in October. Brian, don't cut my mic off. That was meant to be a very, very terrible joke. But seriously, I think that both of these teams are on a collision course to make the next few months of baseball very, very fun. Speaking of which, let's go around baseball and at least take a look at some of the divisions. And we've already gone through the Mets and the Yankees very, very extensively. Now, the AL East, Yankees up six games against Baltimore, is behind, six games behind at 53-51. Toronto tied in the loss column with them, also six games back. Do you see either of those teams, Derek, making a run at the Yankees, or is the wild card all they have?
You know, I would still give Baltimore the edge out of those two teams to make a run at the Yankees, despite the Yankees wiping them out a week or two ago. Baltimore, I just think they have the best balance. I think they got a good bullpen. I think they hit. They made a couple of quiet acquisitions. You know, Parra in right field, you know, helps out with Adam Jones and Chris Davis in the lineup. And Machado's a monster over at third. So I still would give them the edge. You know, sometimes their pitching's hit or miss. You know, sometimes Chen is off his game or Gonzalez. But for the most part, I like Baltimore's pitching better. Toronto, they give up. Maybe they're similar to the Yankees in terms of their overall pitching, but I like Baltimore's pitching better than Toronto's. I would probably give them the edge if somebody's going to come back. But that AL is wide open with wild cards, so it doesn't matter if you can catch the Yankees because there's so many teams within three games of the wild card.
And when you look at the statistics and the standings, in the Central, Kansas City is up eight games over Minnesota, and it's a little bit closer in the West.
Right.
Houston up four against the Angels, and the wild card is absolutely messy. If the season were to end today, L.A. and Minnesota would be the two wild card teams.
How about Minnesota?
And they came out of nowhere. I can't say enough about the job that Paul Molitor has done as a manager. And you don't want to disrespect Ron Gardenhire with the many, many years that he's been with the team.
Right.
But goodness gracious, you have Torii Hunter reliving his not quite his glory days with the Twins, but close enough.
Yeah.
They called up Miguel Sano very, very early, and the pitching has surprisingly been better than advertised. Phil Hughes earning his money up there.
Yeah. So, Brian Dozier is doing a good job, right? Popping the ball out. He was an all-star this year.
Snubbed.
And we hardly even see any of them. You know how many times I'll see a ball player, I'm like, oh, man, what is he doing? Like, think of the guy in Colorado, Nolan Arenado. I can't even say his name.
It's Arenado.
But he's a gold glove third baseman. He puts up tremendous numbers. He's up there with anybody. Goldschmidt, you know, I think he leads the league in ribbies right now.
Yes, he does.
But you out of sight, out of mind, because you turn on ESPN, it's old Mike Trout. All right. That's the way it is sometimes. Sometimes when you get too much information, it doesn't register. It's just there's so many different stations, and I'm like, man, this kid Arenado is playing great.
And nobody knew. Everyone paid attention in April because baseball was brand new, but he's still raking and not getting the attention he deserves.
No, it was Tulowitzki, and I was on Toronto.
Wow, shoot. Maybe Arenado's next. You still got waivers.
But like you said, Minnesota and Houston, right? I mean, those two teams in the AL clearly impressed me more than anybody. I would have never expected either one of them to be playoff battling in August. No way.
Gotta agree with you.
And Houston's pitching's been great. Not just Cutchell. I mean, they have gotten excellent pitching the whole way through. And they're another team. A lot of their guys bat 200. Valbuena has like 20 homers. How many homers does Luis Valbuena have now?
Valbuena had, last I checked, 18 homers.
I would never expect. He started out with Cleveland. I remember him on Cleveland. He did nothing. Not from a power standpoint. 19 home runs. This guy leads the team in home runs. You know, when you think of Houston, right away you'll think of Jose Altuve because he's a hitter. Hits for average, won a batting title last year, right? Scrappy little base runner, right? He gets you a good amount of steals, plays good defense. But Luis Valbuena, that's what's keeping them in a race. But the pitching, I got to give Houston a ton of credit. I would have never guessed they were going to be in this race. Young team, and you know, McHugh, Feldman, they got Cashmere now. I mean, they're pitching, and the Angels, what happened to them all of a sudden? They got themselves back to even and in first place. Now, where have they lost, like 6-7 in a row?
They have not been good.
You got Trout and Pujols?
I think that might be the problem. They have Trout, Pujols, and everyone else is not helping them out.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at a 55-49 record, there's not much to complain about, especially since if the season ended today,
right,
they'd at least be in the wild card game, but I guess after doing all this talking about the AL, are the Royals still the team to beat? Or have the Yankees maybe usurped that spot, or maybe even Houston?
I'd give KC the edge right now. Probably because of their defense and the strength of their bullpen. Davis and Holland, I don't know if I know of a better 8-9 combination there late in the game.
But Tyson's Miller.
They're good, but are they proven? They're not proven like these guys. But they're good. And Betances showed you a lot last year. Miller's doing something he's never done right now. So we'll see how he is closing out games late in the season now. You know, like last year in the postseason, what was one of the determining factors? When KC beat Baltimore. Britton had a tough time and couldn't close out a couple of spots and help his team. And Davis and Holland were locks. You were scared to watch Davis come into the game. I mean, really. I know Holland's their closer, but when Davis came into the game, you're like, all right, that's it.
Time to switch the game.
So I probably give KC the edge only because of those two factors. The defense is better than the Yankees. I mean, I'll put Teixeira right there with Hosmer, but overall, you know, Perez is a much better catcher. They got better overall defense.
And Escobar's a cheat code.
Oh.
He's a cheat code. I saw him a couple nights ago,
right,
barehanding a two-hopper and whipping it to first in one fluid motion. Whew, just a mess. Now, in the National League, it is worth mentioning that as of right now, Washington's up one game on the Mets, but if the score holds out in Citi Field, the update right now, Mets are up 5-2 entering the bottom of the sixth.
Yep.
Score holds, they're tied up. And then St. Louis leads the Central, Pittsburgh 5.5 back, and the Dodgers are out in front in the West, but San Francisco right behind it, but 2.5. St. Louis so far the best record in the NL. Are they the team to beat, or is there somewhere else that you're looking?
No, they're the best team. They're the best home team in baseball, easily. What are they, 40 wins now at
40
home?
40-16.
They play good enough on the road. They get great pitching. They've only given up about 300 runs this year as a team. You know, think about the guys they've lost, like Wainwright, guys they've had to retire. They had to let Pujols go. Are you kidding me? And they just plug in with young homegrowns. Carpenter? Are you kidding me? Colton Wong? Listen, the Cardinals probably, when you look at everything under one umbrella, consider the personnel, their scouting, the money they spend, probably you could argue they're one of the best organizations in professional sports, the way they're run as a whole. Because I would have been the first, I was the first one to say, you got to be out of your mind to let Pujols go after winning two titles with him. Like, you pay this guy whatever he wants. Now, he's been real good for the Angels this year from a power standpoint. Mm-hmm. Still only batting like 260. But, you know, St. Louis proved everybody, they proved everybody wrong. That guy was Joe DiMaggio, Mickey Mantle, Lou Gehrig stats every year for 10, 11, 12 years with St. Louis. And then, you know, they won a couple titles, and they felt they had to cut him loose because they're financially, you know, responsible within the framework of their organization. And I would have thought that was going to be a big problem for them, right? I mean, think of your teams if they got rid of their, like if Jeter was in his prime and they said, nah, see you later, go some, and he's not even in the power, you know, statistically what Pujols has been. But if you had to do that as a fan, you'd be like, what? We're going to lose. Not the Cardinals.
They bounced right back.
They just win. They just compete every year. They're in the playoffs. They're going to the NLCS. They're going to Worlds. They just, I can't give anybody an edge over them.
And a perfect example of how they plug guys in, Brandon Moss hitting .213 right on the innings. They just traded for him.
Yep.
And he gets the walk-off hit today.
There you go.
Because, of course, he's going to do that.
He put on the white and red and nice, beautiful uniform with the Cardinal. I mean,
he turns into Superman. But the team that really intrigues me out in the National League, the San Francisco Giants. They're the reigning champs. They're 2.5 out in the wild card when right. They really could have been a lot worse for them. And if the season ends today, they are tied for the last wild card spot with the Cubbies.
Which means they would get it in that one game if they had to play a one-game playoff.
Oh, that would be so – I can't wait. But the National League, it's so much fun this year, especially yeah. with the resurgence of the Chicago Cubs. I mean, you can't say enough about Chris Bryant. That's all people want to talk about now. But John Lester, not having the greatest statistical year, but he set the tone for that staff. Jake Arrieta right behind him.
Right.
I mean – the Mets are going to have a lot of fun. And both they and the Yankees have easy schedules throughout the course of this. I mean, them playing the Nationals tonight, it's the last time they see a team over 500, the Mets.
Really?
In fact, for details.
For
sake,
a while?
It's going to be a while because they had a very, very rough stretch coming right out
of
the
break. Let me ask you something while you look that up. With the Cubs, you get the same sense with their hitters that you get with the Mets pitchers? I mean, look at the homegrown talent. That you, like you mentioned Bryant right away. What about Schwarber?
Schwarber out right? of the gate. Right
Soler.
Soler, definitely.
Right? And who's the shortstop waiting to take over for Castro? Because he's just falling apart.
He's playing second right now, Addison Russell.
Right?
It's nuts.
That's four guys right there, homegrown and potential. And Rizzo is finally become what they expected. I mean, he's another homegrown guy. So what did we name? Five homegrown position players? Well, there's only eight spots out there. That's pretty good.
That is.
I kind of look at the Cubs in that regard the way I look at the Mets pitching staff. I really do. And that's what makes them each exciting in their own way as an organization.
I would love to see that. I don't know if Mets fans would like to, but personally I would love to see that matchup in the playoffs. But take a look at the Mets schedule.
Yeah.
Right out of the gate, they faced the Cardinals. They lost the series but salvaged the back end.
Right.
They dropped 2 out of 3, that heartbreaker, that 3-4 loss on the 22nd on a Wednesday. And then that 4-game series where they split against the Dodgers. Then they dropped 2 out of 3 against the Padres. That's when Sandy started making moves.
Right.
In August, they're going to play the Rays in Miami. Then they're going to play, they're going to play the Marlins in Miami. And then they go on to play the Rays. They host the Rockies for a 4-game slate. The next time they see a contending team, the Pirates, the weekend of the 14th to the 16th.
Mid-August.
Exactly. And then you have the Orioles still fighting for a wild card, the right. Rockies again, 4 against the Phillies, and then they have the Red Sox at home. That August is tailor-made for the Mets to do some real damage in the standings.
Well, I think you would agree with this. They blew that one game in D.C. that you mentioned, and the way they lost that 7-1 lead the other day with the Padres, right? With Upton hitting the homer in extra innings. If they sweep the Nationals, to me, that more than makes up for it, right? And you're right there, and you're back even, tied for first. So it's 5-2 still, right? Bottom six or whatever it is.
Well, we'll give. I
think if they could finish the job here tonight, that would make up for those two losses. Because they were bad losses, especially the 7-1 lead. To blow that, you know, it just got hinky. It wasn't extra innings. Upton got that homer in the ninth, but the rain delay made it seem like an extra inning affair all day. But that was kind of weird, but still a blown opportunity. I think if they get this done here tonight, that, come on. And then you just go, like you said, 2 months, and it could be what you're hoping for. New York and baseball.
They're finally back in full swing. Yeah. That about wraps it up for our night of Sports Talk 1240. Got to thank Brian Doyle for spending good hour and change with us. What a sport he was.
Very nice of him. God bless him.
And an excellent guy. Next week, Bill Donahue and Ray Moore will host. Our producer, Rob Kowal, the man on the boards, Brian Graves. For Derek Wozniak, I'm Unkwa Sonya. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.
Expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.